This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Americans think a lot about food. We just don't think a lot about where our food comes from. If your first reaction to that is, well, duh, the grocery store, that's a prime example because, of course, all food comes from farms. Farms and farmers have always faced challenges from the weather and other natural phenomena that they cannot control. They also face challenges from the economy, and the challenges farmers face are sometimes reflected in the availability of certain foods and in the prices we pay. That relationship has pretty much been the extent of our recent connection to where our food comes from. Fortunately, it's beginning to change. The local food movement is reacquainting consumers with those who grow their food. At first, the local food movement seemed like a hip thing to be part of, but now it is seen as vital for environmental sustainability and is helping farmers whose numbers have begun to dwindle even as their average age has been rising. We need farmers because no farmers means no farms, and no farms equals no food. Today, we talk about local farms and local food with Aaron Newton, local food system program coordinator for Cabarrus County and farm manager at the Elma C. Lomax Incubator Farm. He is also the co-author of A Nation of Farmers, Defeating the Food Crisis on American Soil. Welcome to the program. Nice to meet you.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. He is in our Spirit Square studio along with three others. Kristen Davis is here. She is a Mecklenburg County Extension agent with North Carolina State University's Cooperative Extension Service and local food coordinator for the Center for Environmental Farming Systems 10% campaign. That's a mouthful. Good morning and welcome to you.
And good morning. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Mary Roberts is owner and manager of Windcrest Farm. That's a USDA certified organic farm and greenhouse. And Greg Jones is a volunteer coordinator for the Know Your Farms tour. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning.
Well, let me begin with Aaron. Your book is called A Nation of Farmers, Defeating the Food Crisis on American Soil. What is this crisis that we need to defeat?
Well, Mike, we've seen a food system that's evolved over the past 60-plus years that is highly dependent on fossil fuel energy, which is a non-renewable resource. Burning those fossil fuels creates a volatile climate. We also see water degradation and soil loss as a part of that industrialization of food. And so we need to move in the opposite direction towards a more sustainable food system that takes care of both the soil, the animals, the plants, and also the people who are doing the work of farming.
And that, we'll talk about this as we go through the hour, but it seems to me that one of the other topics that run through conversations about the food system is big agriculture and these big firms that have bought up, these conglomerates that have bought up small farms and firms that supply the seeds to those farms, and some of which they own. Can you fight this? Is this a force of nature that simply cannot be fought?
I think one of the changes that we've seen in this local food movement over the past couple of years, Mike, is that we're moving away from what we're against to moving towards what we're for. And so what you see is a focus on better and fresher local foods, on supporting the economic development through the support of small local food businesses and local farms. The relationships that are created amongst us that are doing this work, there's so much to be fighting for that I think we're paying less attention to what we started out fighting against.
Let me ask Mary the same question, because you got into this from a different point of view. You have not come from a family of farmers. You got into this from what? The corporate world, right?
I was in the corporate world prior to my future being freed up to do what I passionately have done since I was 2 years old. Digging the dirt.
And why did you think you could do it in the face of all the trends in agriculture that have been going on that say it's going in the opposite direction? It's going toward big farms and big farmers who don't really own the farm. They work for a big company.
Well, at the time that the opportunity presented itself, I really had everything that I needed to do this. I had the passion, of course. I already had the property, which is a big barrier for a lot of people now getting into it. I have been on that piece of property for 35 years.
Mm-hmm.
We had already put up a greenhouse because I had had that experience early in life is working in a greenhouse. I had just married a wonderful general contractor husband who can build and fix anything.
Can I hire him?
Yes, you can. I'll give you a card at the end of the show. So it was at a point in life I said, if I'm going to do this, I need to do it now. I'm not getting any younger. And when Ray and I started, it was a different climate. It was a different scene. We didn't have Whole Foods. We didn't have Earth Fair. We didn't have the organic section in the grocery store. But I just had a passion for heirloom vegetables. And we started, and it seemed like everything else is just kind of caught up to what we're doing. And we're seeing more and more interest. The culinary schools that we have here in Charlotte have really helped to support our business. Films about what's in our food has spurred people to come and see us. More farmers markets. I don't know that we thought we couldn't do it, so we just dove in.
Which is always, if you don't know what you don't know, sometimes it allows you to do things that you wouldn't do if you did know what you
did. That's exactly right.
I mentioned that the USDA says that despite the fact that agriculture is this state's biggest industry, the number of farmers here is declining, the average age of farmers is rising, and although this is a 14-county region where we are home to more than 10,000 farms, I didn't know that, and nearly 15,000 farmers, average acreage has been decreasing while farm size has risen slightly. I'm not sure I understand all this. Does that mean that more of our farms, Kristen, are being bought out and run by conglomerates, or that farmers are able through technology to get more out of an acre so they don't need that big plot of land? Does it mean that developers are gobbling up the farmland, allowing farmers to make a comfortable exit? Does it mean that as older farmers age out, there is no younger farmer to take their place? What does all this mean?
I think it's all of the above.
Okay.
It's all of the above, a nice mix of everything that you've mentioned, especially for Mecklenburg County. There is, of course, a lot of the farmland that has been developed. When you see a listing of farms or what qualifies as a farm, that doesn't always mean that it is a working farm. It may qualify as a farm but not be a working farm. But one of the trends that I am seeing in my work in Mecklenburg County is this real interest in urban farming. And so what you're seeing is that individuals are very much like Mary, who just have a real passion for food and passion for farming, are figuring out ways to do more with less. So they're figuring out ways to do intensive farming and with smaller amounts of land.
So give me an idea of what an urban farm would be. Where would it be? How big would it be? Is it your backyard, or is it somebody who has 4 or 5 acres someplace?
It could be both. I'm thinking of one case in particular. You may have met Robin Emmons with So Much Good, who started out in her backyard, you know, so starting out with a half an acre and turned it into somewhat of a kind of a micro farm, and then later grew from there to, you know, a couple acres of land over off of Sunset Road. So it can be a real mix. It really depends on what the farmer's growing and what their interest, what they have an interest in.
So when you have an urban farm and you have small acreage and you're maximizing the use of that acreage, are you considered by the government to be a farm owner and that land to be a farm and therefore subject to some of the good things that come out of being a farm and some of the bad things as well, I suppose?
I think that's a great question maybe for Aaron to speak to, because he has experience with the Elma C. Lomax farm, and which is somewhat incorporated into what they teach within the farm school.
Sure. And so there's different categories, Mike. In terms of property tax, you're looking at a minimum of 5 acres for horticulture, a 10 acres for row crop vegetables and livestock production, and 20 acres for forestry products. So that's from a tax standpoint how the government considers you a farm or a non-farm. But you can also be a bona fide farm with smaller acreage. You just won't get the tax breaks.
And I mentioned that she just mentioned the Elma C. Lomax Incubator Farm, and I mentioned it when I introduced you. What is that? What are you incubating? Farmers?
Correct. We are. We're primarily set
How hot does it get in the incubator?
Very hot.
We are. The primary mission of the Lomax Incubator Farm is to train farmers. You mentioned the average age of a farmer. In Cabarrus County, that's 59 years old. And so if we want to replace farmers with younger farmers, older farmers as they age out with younger farmers, they have barriers to entry. Mary mentioned one, which is access to land. Another is access to capital. So we bring in farmers who would adults who would like to be farmers into the LMSC Lomax Incubator Farm, provide them with land, provide them with shared equipment, which lowers the capital intensity of them getting started, and we let them grow there for 3 or 4 years, learn the trade, learn about production, but also about business, let them build a market, and then we spin them out onto their own land base. Mm. And in this way, we're growing farmers in Cabarrus County.
Talk about motivation here, because most farmers aren't rich. Most farmers lose money every year. I don't know how that's possible. How do you stay in business? Many operate on very thin, razor-thin margins, and that are usually one spring frost away from disaster. How would you characterize the state of local farms and farmers, and what would entice somebody who's not yet a farmer to become one?
Well, it's a lifestyle choice, that's for sure. People often make the comment to me of, well, farming is so hard, why would you want to do it? And I always think how hard it was, for me to sit behind a desk on a beautiful day in the freezing air conditioning and looking out the window wishing I could be outside. Now I have that. So it's different.
But can I point out, in July, it's really hot.
It's really hot. But I tell you what, we're very resourceful. We tend to get up early and spend the afternoons in doing something else in the cool. It's something that you adapt to. I've always said that my hardest day on the farm was better than my best day in the corporate world.
Go ahead.
Because I'm creating my own destiny. I'm supporting not only my family, but other families with nutritious food. It's a lifestyle. That's why we go into it.
Now, Greg, you're not a farmer, I don't believe, but you are one of the volunteer coordinators for the Know Your Farms tour. From hearing Mary talk and from hearing me tell you that, and I'm sure you already knew this, that farmers aren't rich and they operate on razor-thin margins and they lose money every year, is that why you're just interested in farms and helping farmers and not a farmer yourself?
Farms need all the help they can get. They're working on a shoestring budget. That we provide visibility. We help them get customers. We, you know, connect people to the farms, try to help them out as much as we can.
And when you talk to people at the Lomax Incubator Farm, what is their motivation? They obviously learn, if they don't know this going in, they learn it very quickly, that they're not going to be billionaires when this is all said and done. And it is hard work. What is their motivation? Is it similar to Mary's motivation?
It is very similar to Mary's. But I'll say one of the benefits of Lomax is we have had participants who have come in with the idea that they want to be farmers. And they spend a year and they decide that farming's not for them. And we don't consider that a failure. We consider that a success, because now they can move on to something else in their life that they want to do. And they didn't go out and buy 10 acres and spend $250,000 and move their family out onto a farm and buy a tractor and all of that, and then realize that it's not for them.
Is technology helping to take some of the vagaries out of farming? And I have about 10 seconds here.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of what we're seeing is going back and looking at small and medium scale technology and then using modern manufacturing techniques to update that.
We'll come back to that and some other things about climate change and how that's impacting farmers. And then we'll talk more about local farms and what they offer as we return. Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
We'll get back to this encore edition of Charlotte Talks in just a moment. The Charlotte Area Know Your Farms Tour is next weekend, September 27th and 28th. Details at wfae.org/charlottetalks or knowyourfarmstour.com. Support comes from WFAE members and Mr. Rogers Windows, a local family business since 1986, offering renewal by Anderson replacement windows and entry door systems installed by trained craftsmen. Product details at MrRogersWindows.com. And On Cue Performing Arts, dedicated to classic, contemporary, and original performances, kicking off Season 6, Blues People, a reflection of Black people's journey through American history. Subscriptions now available at CarolinaTix.org. Monday on Charlotte Talks, the historic exhibit LGBTQ Perspectives on Equality at the Levine Museum of the New South. We'll talk about why it's receiving so much attention and what it's trying to achieve. It's when Charlotte Talks, Monday at 9 on WFAE.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup. Lawmakers vote on President Obama's plan to arm Syrian rebels against ISIS. New concerns surface over the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. And a fourth player is suspended by the NFL over family violence.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins, and we're talking to four people who know farming well, an actual farmer in our midst. Mary Roberts, owner of Windcrest Farms and Greenhouses down in Monroe. Aaron Newton is the local food system program coordinator and farm manager of the Elma C. Lomax Incubator Farm up in Cabarrus County. Kristen Davis is a Mecklenburg County Agricultural Extension agent and also the local food coordinator for the Center for Environmental Farming Systems 10% campaign. And Greg Jones is a Know Your Farm Steward volunteer coordinator. Off the air, you were just talking about relationships. And one of the things that this tour is all about is helping people see farms, talk to farmers, the people growing our food, because building a relationship person to person is something that seems to propel this movement.
Exactly. Right? One of the things that we do is try to hook up the public with the local farmers. And you can go to a store and buy some random cabbage, but if you go meet Brent Barbie and know the cabbage come right off their farm that morning, it seems like a lot more of a relationship with the food and with the people.
Farming seems to, has always appeared to me to be a lonely business because you're out there in the field on your tractor or out there in the field doing whatever it is by yourself, maybe an assistant, a helper or something. And you're out there all day, every day, and it's all—it's nonstop. There's always something to do. So when ordinary rank-and-file grocery store shoppers start coming to the farm and talking to you, that's taking you away from the job that you have to do to make this stuff grow. Is it a nuisance to the farmers, or do they enjoy it?
It seems that they enjoy it. They ask to be on the tour. They seem to benefit from the tour, and they, I think, appreciate having people come and be interested in what they're doing. It is lonely, and having someone that knows that they people care about what they do, it seems to be very important.
I take it you're on the tour, right, Mary?
We are. This is the first time we've been on the spring tour. I think the spring tour is
this
new.
This is the first time we've offered a spring tour, yes.
We have been on the tour, I think, for four of the fall tours. Aaron and I were just talking earlier that it's a great time to stop and clean up and get all those little projects because, you know, company's coming. It's an opportunity for folks that we meet at the farmer's market to come and visit the farm because we get requests to come visit all the time. And being a working farm, we don't have time for that. We're busy growing the food. So this is a chance for us to say, yes, you can come. We've dedicated a whole day for us to walk around the farm and share with you what we're doing.
I think it was material I got from you, Kristen, that said, and correct me if I'm wrong, that said essentially there are a lot of people out there who have no idea where their food comes from. Kids are very familiar with French fries, but many of them mm-hmm. have never seen a potato, which is hard to believe, but okay, that's true, that's true.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sure that there are adults out there
absolutely.
Who, you know, if a chicken's not in saran wrap and a styrofoam tray,
yes.
they don't know what it is. What is finding out where the food comes from do for people?
Oh, it changes them. It truly changes them. I can tell you that a lot of the feedback that I've received from those who have been on the farm tour is that they have a deeper value for their food, a deeper value for the level of energy and love and labor that goes into producing their food. Mm-hmm. And it really does encourage them to source more local food.
I mean, we've talked to educators who have started these gardens at schools about kids who don't know where their food comes, mm-hmm. that have never seen anything grow, who are then asked to plant peas and lima beans and whatever. And then even though they would never touch a pea if it came out of a can or if it came out of a frozen food package, mm-hmm. they want to taste it. They want to find out what this thing is like when it grows. They planted it. They've seen it grow.
Absolutely.
They've watered it. They want to try. Yeah.
Yes. Exactly.
So is that part of getting people to eat healthier?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that there is a deeper level of understanding that comes from food and the nutrition of food when you're actually growing it yourself, or you have the experience to go out to a farm and see, you know, how food is truly cultivated. I can remember a couple cases in the past when I've been on the farm tour, seeing children completely just amazed that, you know, carrots grow in the ground, or, you know, broccoli grows, you know, not in the ground. I mean, not, you know, not, it's a root vegetable. And so I think it really does increase knowledge. It increases passion around food. And I think one of the things that's so important as a part of this food movement, local foods movement, is the food literacy piece, mm-hmm. you know, because I think what happens is that people have an opportunity to see food growing. But I have the valuable opportunity of teaching people what to do with the food once they harvest it, which is a really important part. It's good to know how to grow it, but you got to know what to do with it.
What to do with it, which we will talk about as we go through here. Today we're supposed to get some heavy rain, 3 to 4 inches, I'm told, in parts of the area. People in California are having these horrible fires and terrible drought throughout the Southwest. Heavy snowfall and cold in the Midwest and the Northeast this winter, and lots of snow melt and lots of water up there. We seem to be going through, I read yesterday or 2 days ago that the ice shelf in Antarctica is beginning to melt much quicker than we thought, and that's going to precipitate a much quicker rise in sea level. All of this is associated with climate change. Farming was never easy. We were always at the vagaries of the weather. What is it doing to you now when it's really super hot and hotter earlier and when it's drier or wetter than it should be?
Well, I tell you, last year was really a challenge for our area farmers. The heavy spring rains, we know, took out a lot of farmers' investment in their early crops. We lost several farmers out of the Matthews Farmers Market. They weren't able to bring anything to market because it all washed away. Mm. We're very fortunate in that we have what's called high tunnels on the farm, which looks like a greenhouse, but we're actually growing in the ground. And so those high tunnels helped us with the heavy rain in the spring. We were able to bring crops because we could control the environment. The flip side was that this winter, when we got that unprecedented snowfall, it collapsed one of the tunnels because we aren't used to having all of that snow load. And so we lost a third of our production area that had helped us in the spring with the weather. So there's things that we're doing. But the weather is the weather, and it affects everybody.
What about technology? And maybe you want to follow up on what she just said, but what about technology? Are there things in the pipeline? Are there things that have already been done, like these tunnels, which I'd never heard about, that are helping farmers avoid some of the extremes of weather?
Well, absolutely. I think the diversification is the response that I'm seeing, both in terms of the crops that are being planted, also planting time, starting things earlier maybe than you would have, and doing succession plantings, which means planting them several times so that if you do get hit early with a late frost, or if it gets too hot too early, that you somewhere in there got a planting that you can take to market. But also the equipment and the technology, Mike, that you mentioned. We're seeing high tunnels. We're also seeing low tunnels being used, which are just smaller tunnels that go right over the tops of rows out in the field and allow mm-hmm. you some frost protection so you can get things up and going earlier or hold them later into the
fall.
But
that adds to the cost of your operation, it seems to me.
It does, but what we're also seeing is really innovative strategies at doing it really cheaply. So there's a guy in Texas who developed a bender for making these low tunnels mm-hmm. That takes regular conduit that you buy off the shelf at Lowe's for fairly inexpensive stuff and bend it yourself. And then you're buying fabric that's, you know, relatively cheap to be able to cover these low tunnels. So we're finding ways it's sort of a do-it-yourself versions of these technologies to use on the farm.
Yours is a USDA-certified organic farm.
Yes.
And you encourage people to spend their raw food dollars at farmers markets to support the local economy. Not all food at farmers markets is organic. So which is more important, buying locally or buying organic locally?
If I had the choice between buying USDA-certified organic from even California or a lot coming from overseas, I would choose local over organic if I knew the grower. There are lots of growers here in the Charlotte area that follow national organic program guidelines mm-hmm. that don't feel that it's necessary to go for that certification because they have that direct relationship mm-hmm. with their clients. We are certified organic because part of our operation is in the greenhouse, and we supply transplants for other certified growers. That's part of the certification rules. If a farmer who is certified buys transplants, they must be from a certified greenhouse. So that's part of our marketing strategy. But above that, that's USDA symbol tells folks a portion of our story if we can't tell it directly to them. First, I want you to...
Shorthand.
It's shorthand because there is a lot of standards behind that symbol that symbol represents. They know that if they bought a product from me that there are no GMOs in it, that it has been raised on a farm that is preserving water, soil, biodiversity, it tells a lot, that symbol. That symbol also opens up some markets for us that wouldn't be available to us if we were non-certified. Mm. So it covers a lot of things for us. But to answer your question, it comes back to know your farm, know your farmers, be educated, know what questions to ask.
What are those questions? And if I know a person and they're a farmer and I've been to their farm and I've seen their operation, how would I know that they're a good farmer or the produce that they're producing is right for me? How would I, what is there to know? What should I know, I guess is the question.
Well, if I was visiting a farm and I saw some nice clean edges to everything, I would wonder if there wasn't some herbicides being used. I would want to go onto a farm and I would want to see beneficial habitats, flowers. I would want to ask questions about particular pest pressures. There is a level of trust, but I think that the more that you know about how food is raised, you could go onto a farm and look and see if there's any telltale signs that maybe there was something that was not not kosher to it.
Now, Greg, you're not a farmer, but I know that there's farmers in your past, in your family tree. But you describe yourself as somebody, an ordinary person who likes to eat.
Eating is good.
Yes. So as somebody who's helping out with his Know Your Farms tour, what do you look for in a farm and a farmer?
I look for just somebody that's very passionate about what they're doing. I talk to them, and they may have their own community-supported agriculture program where they are working directly with their customers. I look for nice people. I look for sort of old equipment.
Really? Why? Really,
because if you can afford all these high-dollar, high-paint job, you know, fancy things, you're probably leaning more toward a factory kind of environment rather than somebody who is on a shoestring, family farm, small organization, been in the same generation for, you know, five generations, same family, things like that.
One of the reasons that some of these farmers have these old tractors and these old pieces of equipment is because they can't afford to replace them.
Yes.
If you're just getting into the farming business, you probably don't have any of that. You don't even have an old one. So what do you tell farmers about, who want to be farmers, farmers-to-be, about the startup costs and how they finance all of that? How do you get started if you don't have it coming, being handed down to you, father to son, mother to daughter?
Well, and that's what the incubator farm program is about. And we're one of several, Mike, in the state, and there are more coming programs that allow people to go out and not only have access to land, but access to different types of equipment so that they can then figure out what pieces of equipment are most useful to them. Then we work with them to help them understand the cost not only of purchasing equipment, but also maintaining it, which is key. Mm-hmm. And then they can put that into their business plan, and they know they need X amount of dollars for certain pieces of equipment, and they can move forward either with loans or grants or savings to be able to eventually purchase that equipment on their own. They're also sharing a lot of equipment amongst smaller farmers, especially things that don't get used very often during the year. Mm.
There was a push prior to the recession toward these neighborhoods being built. And we did a couple of shows on this with people who were going to develop tracts of land adjacent to a farm. And the farmer would work for the people who had bought the houses in the neighborhood, and they would pay a fee, like a condo fee almost, to offset the cost of the planting and the growing and the farmer's cost, and then they would all share in the harvest, either through eating the food or selling the food at community farmers' markets. Is that still going on, or did it ever really start?
Well, I was a part of one of those communities, the Bloom community in Harrisburg.
Yes, that's the one I'm talking about.
Wonderful concept. Primarily what we ran into is troubles with zoning and planning within that part of the city of Harrisburg and their development plan. Mm-hmm. So they didn't really know what to do with this. It's agriculture, it's commercial, it's residential. How does this fit into the structure of our existing planning and zoning?
It sounds simple to me. I don't know why that's so difficult to understand.
It is at a certain level, but it didn't fit neatly into the categories that the town of Harrisburg needed it to fit in. And also, they wanted to focus development in another part of their city. So what we would love for communities who have a desire for that sort of development to occur to reach out and find the folks who are involved and push a program like that forward.
Let's talk about the four seasons. There are actually four seasons, but not in the grocery store, because in the grocery store there's only one season, and it's now. It's always now. When I was a kid, I remember not being able to get a strawberry because it was January, and not being able to get a nice tomato because it was December. But in June, I could get a great tomato far better than I can get in the grocery store today. Are we trying to return to seasonal fruits and vegetables?
Absolutely.
And that was one of the things that I loved about being a member of the Community Supported Agriculture Program is that the seasonality of the produce was amazing. You get the box that week. Mm-hmm. It's like a treasure chest. What are we getting this week? Could be getting root vegetables in the winter, could be getting really nice leaf crops in the spring. So that's one of the benefits.
But we've been spoiled. I mean, we want to be able to go to Harris Teeter or Food Lion or one of the other stores and buy strawberries, blueberries, right now. Come on.
But when you've had a fresh strawberry or blueberry, the taste is so different that you won't want to have that strawberry in the middle of the winter because you know the taste difference. And, you know, it allows us to be more creative with our eating. In the last couple of years with the Food Network, celebrity chefs, we're watching people cook and eat and learning more about that. At the same time, going back to the you know, the old ways of freezing our own and canning our own and dehydrating our own so that you can still have some of those flavors, but maybe not that fresh, not that fresh, quote, fresh that's come in from thousands of miles away.
Because it really isn't fresh.
It's not fresh.
It was harvested before it should have been harvested, and then it was shipped, which causes all kinds of carbon footprint issues, which we will also talk about when we come back. And I want to talk about what's ripe right now when we come back. And I'm going to echo something you said, Greg, about the surprise factor of all this when we come back as well. We got a bunch of things to talk about, so don't go away. Charlotte Talks on WFA.
Just a reminder, this is a rebroadcast edition of Charlotte Talks. The next Charlotte Area Know Your Farms tour is next weekend, September 27th and 28th. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Park Sterling Bank, providing financial solutions for personal and business needs. Answers you can bank on. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. Details at parksterlingbank.com. And Festival in the Park, celebrating 50 years, now through Sunday at Freedom Park. Featuring 180 arts and craft exhibitors, 5 performance stages, open to the public. Information at festivalinthepark.org. Coming up next at 10 o'clock on the News Roundup on the Diane Rehm Show, a panel of journalists will join guest host Elise Labatt for analysis of the week's top national news stories. Lawmakers will vote on President Barack Obama's plan to arm Syrian rebels against ISIS. New concerns surface over the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. and a fourth player is suspended by the NFL over family violence. Those stories and more coming up at 10. Get up to date on the day's latest news by listening to All Things Considered, weekdays from 4 to 6:30 p.m. on WFAE. It's your front row seat behind the headlines and offers a thorough and accurate account of what happened while you were at work. Make your commute home informative as well as entertaining with the most comprehensive news program on radio today. All Things Considered from NPR and WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about local farms, local farmers, and we're talking to people who know it well. We're talking to Greg Jones, who is the volunteer coordinator for the Know Your Farms Tour. Mary Roberts is an owner and manager of Windcrest Farm in Monroe, an organic USDA-certified organic farm. Kristen Davis is Mecklenburg County Agricultural Extension agent. And Aaron Newton is a local food system program coordinator and farm manager of the Elma C. Lomax Incubator Farm up in Cabarrus County. Let's talk about seasonal stuff again, because that's one of the things that buying local stresses, that you're not going to get a blueberry at the farmer's market in November. It's just not going to happen. But when you get a blueberry, when it's in season, the flavor will surprise you if you've only had
grocery
store.
It will spoil you.
Yes. because it's like going to South Carolina during peach season and buying a peach at a peach stand versus buying a peach in the grocery store. There is no comparison. You might as well be eating an automobile tire in the grocery store in comparison. But we have grown up in the last 30 years, 40 years, in this instant gratification society. I want a strawberry now, not 6 months from now. How do you change people's minds about that?
You have them taste real food. I mean, that is the convincing. There's no talking or showing. It's in the tasting. And once you have tasted real food, like I said, you'll be spoiled. That's what you will want. And you'll say, "If this was so amazing now, okay, what's coming up next?"
And there's something to be said for delayed gratification, because I do remember as a kid not being able to have something that I wanted because it wasn't available. Mm-hmm. And when it became available, it was a treat.
It's that anticipation factor.
Yeah.
You can wait all year for the blackberries to be ripe.
And maybe they'd only be available for a week or two or three or four, whatever it was. But for that time period, it was a treat. There's something to be said for that, too. You were talking off the air, Kristen, about kids and their reaction to freshly grown carrots and things like that. Mm-hmm. It changes their viewpoint on food.
Absolutely. I do believe that it is possible for children to fall in love with food at a very young age if you expose them. And, I mean, we see, you know, in the programs that we work with young people, that if they have the opportunity to see food grow and to actually taste fresh food, that, you know, over time they will begin to prefer it. Mm-hmm. It is possible. I mean, I think that incorporating fresh, healthy food into the diet as soon as possible is very important, because you're setting those dietary patterns for them that will follow them throughout their lives.
Yeah, our grandkids love vegetables. We taught them their alphabet. A is for asparagus, B is for broccoli, C is for carrots. They love it.
You can teach me that too. Tell me, what is ripe right now?
Well, we're a little bit in transition. We're still pulling from our fall, winter, spring plots, such as Swiss chard, kale, snow peas. We're harvesting snow peas right now. Onions are coming in, radishes. We're just on that transition for we'll go into the warm season, tomatoes, eggplants, cucumbers. So the weather right now, you know, getting some really hot days and getting, you know, normal spring, just kind of varies what crops will be done and what are coming on.
You say, Mary, that if you were to stop buying your vegetables at a grocery store, they would not notice at the grocery store that you had stopped buying their vegetables, because you're still coming in for the laundry detergent and whatever.
Right.
But if you start buying your vegetables at a farmer's market, the farmers will notice.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That farmer's market day is our payday. And that produce that we have just harvested within 24 hours of it going to your table, that produce was a year in the making. We started planning that a year ago. So that day when you buy it, that's our payday. If you don't buy it, it's got three places it's going to go. It's either going to be donated, it's either going to my table or my freezer, or it's going into the compost pile for the next season.
How much waste would you say there is?
More than we want.
Really?
Yeah.
People are going hungry.
Exactly. And people are going hungry even if they're buying things in the grocery store because they're not buying food that is at its prime nutritionally dense state.
Not every farmer, I would think, participates in farmers markets, do they? How many farmers do you know about whose produce ends up in a farmers market locally?
Very many farmers, especially many. When you look at Mecklenburg County. I say we're very lucky to have the necklace counties around us that are more rural. We're lucky to have each other because Charlotte has a lot of the demand for the fresh produce, and the farmers in those necklace counties have the supply.
And how important are these farmers markets to these farmers?
Very important. Very important because many farmers are, growing their food to take to the farmers market. Charlotte, I've seen over the past few years, Charlotte grow from being just a Saturday market type of city to a all week market type of city because there's that much demand growing for local food.
And when you talk about the slim margins that we have, when you take your food dollar into a grocery store chain, the farmer is getting on average 10 cents of that dollar. The other 90 cents are going into that corporate structure of distribution, warehousing. But when you take that farm dollar, that food dollar, to a farmer's market and you hand it to the farmer, he's getting all of that dollar.
But I know there's I'll mention them. What the heck? Harris Teeter mentions sometimes that on the packaging that it's coming from a local farm in South Carolina or so-and-so's farm in Concord, wherever it may be. That's not true? Or is that or the same? Is that
I'm
how
sure.
is that different from buying it from a farmer's market? Just because of the what the farmer takes away from that?
Well, exactly, because they're paying Harris Teeter or whoever it is, they're paying for the distribution, the marketing, the structure of the store. So there's a lot of things that
are
the
farmer
paying
for Walter at Bio?
That's part of the marketing, so yes.
Aaron, want to join this?
Sure. And we're seeing Lowe's Foods reaching out to very small and medium-sized local growers trying to get that produce into the grocery store. Farmers markets are wonderful. There's a much greater return for the farmers. Most of the small growers I know, especially the new ones, the vegetable and fruit growers, are at some sort of farmers markets. We're looking at 68 farmers markets throughout the 14-county region.
North Carolina has a huge number of farmers markets.
Yes. Absolutely. But then that grocery store there is an option for days of the week or times of the day when the market isn't open.
This is really a good sign because they're doing it because of demand. People are becoming more educated. Mm-hmm. They want local food. The grocery store chains wouldn't be doing this if it wasn't a customer demand. So that is really encouraging for those of us that are doing it.
Well, Carrie on Twitter has a very important question. She says, I love farmers markets, but I'm always disappointed when more than half of the produce comes from Florida. And I know of farmers markets that are well attended where I have discovered that the produce did not come from local farms. Are there any true local markets, and how can you tell if you go to a farmers market that the produce is coming from Mecklenburg County or one of the ring counties around us?
The Matthews Farmers Market, where we have been for 10 years now, is a producer-only market. There is nothing in the market that didn't come from a farm. I think it's a radius of 50 miles. Mm-hmm. The Union County Farmers Market has just recently been refocused to local only. And so there is a verification process by the market board that what is being represented at the market is truly local. And again, it's knowing the seasonality of vegetables and fruits. If you go into a market and you see the strawberries in, you know, December, that's your clue that that is not
truly local. They might have come from Mexico.
It may have.
It might have.
But I would say, too, that it's part back to the relationships. If you talk to the farmer, find out where are they from, if they're from Cabarrus County, how do they grow? You can go and actually bypass the farmer's market entirely and go directly to the farmers that you have a relationship with and become part of their organization.
This is purely an impression on my part, but there have been places that I've gone to farmer's markets where you're talking to the people and it becomes relatively quickly that the person you're talking to has never seen the farm that the produce
I would
has
not
come
buy
from
them.
I agree.
And you sometimes wonder, well, maybe they went to the grocery store and bought this stuff and set up shop here.
A lot of them do, yes.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean,
that's my question. How do you know
relationships?
And you have producer-only markets, as Mary mentioned, Atherton as well, and the Davidson Market are also producers. So they have a verification system in place as an organization to go out to the farms.
Is there a certification like the USDA certification that you can look for to know that this market actually uses and sells produce from farmers and in the local area?
I don't think there's an official certification process. You know, we can get really bogged down a lot in certifications and that kind of thing.
Or at least some membership in some ex officio organization that costs $1 a year to belong to.
A producer-only market really markets themselves as that. Okay. I mean, that's
what to look for.
That is what to look for. They will proudly say this is a producer-only market. And we've mentioned the ones that we're aware of in the Charlotte area. We actually have our product at Atherton, though I am not there personally selling it. The person who is comes to the farm regularly, knows us. I mean,
okay,
so those relationships.
It's not necessarily like a stamp of approval necessarily like you have for, you know, an organic grower. However, one of the things that we've really tried to encourage through the Centers for Environmental Farming Systems and Cooperative Extension is the 10% campaign, where we challenge consumers to at least commit 10% of their food budget, their total food budget, to sourcing local food. And so one of the benefits of the campaign is that we also have business partners, many of which are farmers and farmers markets, who participate in the campaign. Right. And so as a result of that, their information is posted on the website. Consumers can go there and they can find information about the farms, the farmers markets, and those businesses. And so there's not necessarily a stamp of approval, but I agree with what everyone has said. Often I teach consumers that it's really important to have conversations with the people that you're growing from. I think you can tell, you know, like you said, if the conversation tends to take a shift, then I think that consumer then has to use their best judgment about whether they want to purchase from that person or not.
Aaron, you wanted to jump in on this, I believe.
I was just going to echo what Kristen said. It's about asking the farmers, did you grow that?
Mm-hmm. Know your farms.
Rachel on Twitter writes, I would happily buy local produce at farmers markets if it was more affordable and markets had afternoon hours. No afternoon hours, weekend hours only. Sometimes it's a problem. So what about the cost of this? We know organic produce is usually more expensive than non-organic produce. What about local produce versus just going to the grocery store and buying a cucumber that came from God knows where?
You know, I think our prices are pretty competitive with what we see in the grocery stores. I don't think that we're out of line with what is available in grocery stores.
And I think the other point that's very important, too, is that when you're looking at, you know, one of the things we teach is food budgeting. I think it's very important to look at quantity. Mm-hmm. I think we have been very spoiled to want, you know, large amounts of food for a very cheap price. Which doesn't necessarily always fit within meal planning. I mean, I think if you look at the prices at farmers markets, those prices are, you know, very competitive if you're eating proper portion sizes.
Okay. I don't want to run out of time before we talk about this very quickly. Rowan and Cabarrus counties are among 14, which are part of a study called Connect Our Future. That study discovered that residents in this 14-county area spend $763 million every year on fresh fruits and vegetables that can be grown locally. If that kind of money was funneled into the local economy, what would the impact be? Or what is the impact?
Well, that would be huge. That would be an explosion of this effort that we're talking about today, Mike. These are opportunities for new growers to get into the business. And think about the fact we know we all don't eat enough vegetables, right? So this number really should be a lot higher. And that's not including the proteins, the animal, the dairy, all of the value-added products. So you're talking about an enormous economic opportunity for growers, value-added folks, to get into the business and to get into the local food business and to meet that gap.
So going to farmers markets is helpful to the local economy at large. It raises all boats, essentially, is what you're saying.
Absolutely. And we're not even talking about the secondary and tertiary local businesses the farmers are using to build things on their farms, the equipment sales, all of that stuff.
There's some evidence from Kentucky that the local food movement there has driven people to local farmers markets. It's improving health because those people who shop at those markets eat more fresh fruits and vegetables. Can the same be said here?
Oh, yes.
And you believe that agribusiness or agritourism is an important part of this whole thing, which is why you're so enthusiastic about
awareness and visibility, just letting people know what's available.
What about food deserts? There are places in this city, and I have 30 seconds,
absolutely,
where there are food deserts and probably no access to food to local farmers markets. Is there an answer for those folks? Is it growing your own food an answer?
That's the urban gardening.
Yes, urban gardening, growing your own food, learning. You know, many people don't know that if you receive SNAP benefits or EBT benefits, you can use those benefits to purchase food-bearing plants and seeds to be able to use to grow your own food.
If you have dirt, you can feed people.
Okay, so the Charlotte Area Know Your Farms Tour is next weekend. That's September 27th and 28th. And you can find details about that at our website at wfae.org/Charlotte Talks. Remember, eating local isn't just hip. It's vital for environmental stability and for keeping farmers in business. No farmers, no food. Thank you all for the hour.
Charlotte Talks with